You are listening to 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. The opinions expressed on this show do not reflect the opinions of KUCI station management, the University of California, or the UC Board of Regents. I'm Tina Spindler, and welcome to In the Garden with University of California Master Gardeners. I'm here today to talk about a subject that will be very helpful for me, and that is houseplants. We're going to talk about how to have happy houseplants with my guest, Kay Havens. Kay, welcome.
Hi, Tina. It's always so good to be with you. We always have such a good time when we do this together.
Oh, we do. And this one's going to be especially fun because I'm embarrassed to say, but I am a master gardener who religiously kills houseplants.
Oh, it's different indoors. It's easy to have a black thumb indoors. And we'll go over that.
Yes, we really, really have a lot to cover because, and maybe the first way to kick this off is I have some plants that were here for the holidays, and maybe we should chat about those first because they're living on, and you know me, I can't willingly kill anything, but I hate to subject them to a cold, cruel, slow death, which I'm afraid that perhaps I am. So I have that lingering poinsettia, I have the amaryllis that bloomed, I have those great paper whites that I forced to bloom for the holidays. So what should we do with
what
all of
should
those?
We do? I know it's Valentine's Day, and a poinsettia is red,
but not traditional for
not
Valentine's
quite
Day.
Traditional. Can I cut the leaves and the little hearts? What can I do with it? Well, some of these plants you can take outdoors if you're really so inclined. If you really want to have a 4 or 5 foot poinsettia in your yard, you can move them out. But I use the Marie Kondo method.
Yes, what
is that?
Which
is how you clean out your closet. And you only keep the things that bring you joy.
Ah.
So if you're starting to have a plant that's starting to make you feel guilty.
Yes.
And as if you're maybe not all that you should be as a gardener. And you really don't have a spot for it. And you really kind of are tired of it. I give you permission. When nobody's looking, you can fling it if you want. Because I tell you, there are people who keep those poinsettias, and believe me, there's nothing that kind of looks stranger, weirder, or worse than a poinsettia way out of season, you know, unless it's a gorgeous one that somebody's, you know, really brought along in their garden, and it goes in their garden, and it's part of their garden design, go ahead, fling it out.
So I won't be a murderer if
I'm not, you know. If we can eat lettuce and consume greenery every day on our plate, I give you permission to count it as a consumption item.
Ah, that's a good way to think of it.
Or also count it as a flower arrangement. Even though it has roots, just think of it as a flower arrangement. And the flower arrangement would have been gone months ago because it was, you know, without roots, it dies after a week.
Right.
And that's kind of the same thing with a lot of these plants. Now, the paper whites you can take out in the garden, the amaryllis you can take out into the garden, give them a nice bright spot. They'll be back again next year. Maybe not on this same schedule. Maybe so, depending on how diligent you are at, you know, maybe chilling them if need be.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of the paper whites will naturalize. So.
Right. Yeah, I have. That's what I've done with them is I take the paper whites out and just in any corner of the yard, and I don't even prepare the soil. I hate to say it, but, you know, a little shovel, dig a hole, plop them in, cover them up. And sure enough, I know.
Yeah, they're tougher than you think.
Hundreds of paper whites in my yard. And they bloom actually at a really kind of cool time. They bloom in the fall when not a whole lot else is going on in the garden.
Yeah, so. Or sometimes they'll pop up in the spring as well.
Yeah.
Depending on how deeply you've planted them and the soil temperatures and that kind of thing. But the holiday plants can be angst ridden.
Yes.
And the greeting card plants.
Yes. I like those names. Greeting card plants, holiday plants. So the greeting card plants would be ones you would bring as hostess gifts or for a birthday or Mother's Day or something like that.
Many of them are great on the table for a couple weeks. And then the chrysanthemums, the kalanchoes, the azaleas, if you can slowly harden them up a little bit. Just put them under a covered patio until they get used to the outdoor temperatures. They probably haven't ever experienced things down below 55 degrees because they've been brought along in greenhouses. Get them used to the outdoor temperatures. And if you really, really want them in your garden, go ahead and plop
them in. Give
it
a try.
Yeah. So, but now the hydrangeas, those hothouse softies, they might take a little bit longer. And some of them were developed for the greenhouse trade. So basically they are very much like a cut flower and they may not adapt to outdoor conditions. Just be aware of that and don't feel bad. By all means, don't feel bad.
I like that, to think of them as cut flowers, because they do last longer than cut flowers. You get a few weeks out of them, generally speaking, but then you don't have to feel bad when they're
done.
No,
don't feel bad, because they are very much, you know, a part of that holiday nursery trade.
Right.
And they're, you know, the nurserymen need you to buy another one every year, so don't feel bad about it.
There you go. That's another way to
helping
think of,
the nurseryman out by getting a fresh one every year.
Yeah. No, good point. I never thought about that. Do my part for the economy
by
killing
the gardening economy. Get another one.
That's so funny. Well, that's great advice, especially since we have some, you know, springtime holidays or late winter holidays coming up, and we're all going to be inclined and tempted when we go to, you know, the grocery store, Trader Joe's, the big box retailers, to come home with these, you know, bright pink azaleas and other gorgeous blooming plants. But then here we are. You had a term before the show started that I loved. What did you call the windowsill hall of shame or something like that? That was
the windowsill of death.
The
or
windowsill
shame,
of death.
Where
or
you
shame.
Put the little plants and you feel like you should be keeping them alive, and every time you see them, you get this jolt of like, oh, you know, I just.
especially if someone has been silly enough to let you train as a master gardener, and then you kill these plants, you feel even worse.
Which that brings us to kind of our first point about houseplants.
Yes.
Is they really have to be adapted to low light.
Yeah.
Unless you have a bright, warm, probably eastern, maybe in the winter western window. Light values are so important because, let's face it, light is what keeps a plant alive. That's their food source, and that's how they photosynthesize. So if they're deprived of light, they're not going to grow. So that windowsill of shame
might be a
feel bad.
Sort of good place, but maybe yeah. not for you that
we
particular
don't
plant.
We need to have that negative energy in our lives.
Yeah. Well, I was the benefit of attending a recent talk that you gave and on indoor plants, and I had never seen this handout that you used before from the University of California on indoor plants, and I love it, and I've saved it, and it's going to go in my, you know, special folder of keeper handouts. But one of the things I liked about this, because it's always good for me to have something that encourages me to remember the different points in an easy way, and I loved that this handout used the acronym PLANT for you to remember the different categories of things that you need to consider in order to grow healthy plants. So can you tell us what the PLANTS, P-L-A-N-T-S, stands
so
for?
It's placement, also could also be position, light, acclimate, nourishment, temperature, and symptoms that gets you into disease. So it's plants.
So should we start
Let's
going
start
through
at,
each one?
Let's start at the letter P.
Yeah.
Placement. Because in the home it's just the same as it is for out in the garden. You want to think about what the plant needs to do for you first. And if you could dig a hole in the garden in your home first, that's kind of what you should think of doing before going to the nursery, is you're gonna figure out what that space needs and what you really want to accomplish. Do you want just a small spiller plant? Will that work? Do you need a tall thriller plant? Do you want something that's going to fill up a pot and cascade out? What do you really need in that spot? And then go looking for a plant that's going to serve your needs given your light values. So Well, and before I get to light values, also how much care and attention are you going to be able to give this plant?
There's the key.
Yes, because you know we've all been in the offices where there's the fake Ficus benjamina, and that's actually a great place for a fake Ficus benjamina because nobody's going to be taking care of it. Right. So honestly assess how much time you're going to spend taking care of it and plan accordingly. So some of the plants take very little care. Some of the better species of ficus, some of the raphis palms, you can throw them in the corner and just kind of keep them watered from time to time, and believe it or not, they'll survive so long as they have adequate light for their needs. So, but you'll probably have to pay for those better species more than you would for a less
interesting. Mm-hmm. Huh. Yeah. Yeah. Pothos is my personal favorite. It's pretty much the only one that survives at my house.
It is a winter, and you know that brings up another important point, is that if it's a plant that is really easy to grow, no need to invest a lot of money in it, because it will actually acclimate better to your house if you buy a small one and grow it into place than if you get a big one and bring it in.
So, good point, because you can get a pothos for $2.99.
Right, and if you're like just even an average grower, you can grow a pothos up, and you know, so long as you keep it relatively well nurtured. So they are very easy. A great beginner plant.
Good, good. Or plant that even an experienced gardener can't kill, no matter how hard they try. Well,
yeah.
and then I like that you brought up the price issue, because I have friends who have invested, you know, a significant amount of money because they all have a spot in their home that requires this, you know, wonderful, tall, big specimen. And of course, those are going to cost, you know, in the hundreds of dollars if you get one of a certain size. And those folks have invested, I know, in services that come in because they don't want to lose the investment for those expensive plants.
Right. And actually, that's a good option for people that want to do something like that, because those services, if the plant is to falter, if the light values aren't to be right, they can actually sometimes change it out for one that's been growing in a more ideal situation.
Oh, interesting.
There are plant lease situations which are great for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So if you need to have a big fiddly fig, if you need to have a big, you know, palm of some kind in your home, it does make sense to have a service where if something happens, they can just change that plant out if it has to look good 24/7, 365.
Yeah, good idea. So that tells us about the placement. Although one more thing that I'd like to talk about with placement, which I suspect is going to be connected to light as well. But like I have a personal situation in my living room where I have plant stands on either side of a fireplace. And so, of course, I want to have the same, I have the same pots on the plant stands. And so, of course, I want to have the same plant on either side so that there's this symmetry. And yet, the placement one is always doing better than the other, which I assume is because of the light and other conditions in that room.
Absolutely. The one that's closest to the window is going to do better 9 times out of 10. So if you wanted to keep them balanced, you could just flip them like every watering.
Interesting.
So that the one that was, that, you know, they were constantly kind of growing at the same pace.
So would you do that, you say every watering, so that would be what, once a week or twice a month or something?
Well, you know, with watering it depends.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that. Like this time of year, you don't water nearly as much as you do in the spring and summer.
Right, right.
Because the plants aren't metabolizing as quickly. The light values are low. But then again, it depends. Because in your home, there are microclimates just like there are outside. And sometimes the sun, as it gets lower in the sky, will actually bring more light into a window in the winter than it does in the summer, depending on the angle of the sun.
Yeah.
So just be aware of that, because sometimes a plant that's very happy in a window in the spring, come summer, the opposite can happen. It can get much, much, much too hot.
Right. So placement isn't a one-time deal.
Placement varies all year long.
Yeah.
Unless you have an artificial light type situation.
Okay. Anything else we should know about placement, or should we move on to light?
Let's move on to light, because it has a lot to
do
with
placement
as well. Know your species. So some plants can take very low light. And if you have a low light situation, then you're going to want to get to a better nursery. Maybe even take a picture of the space with you and say, this is the space I have. Time how much light that area gets and be honest about that. Don't bump the light up by an hour or two like we all want to do.
You mean like I report my weight on my driver's license?
Everybody fudges. Oh, it gets 4 hours of light. And then, you know, if you were the actual plant, you might get two. So what often happens is plants that in those really low light situations are very slow growers.
Okay.
The ones that are really successful. So often it is worth paying for a little more size in some of those plants because, you know, how it looks now is kind of how it's going to look a year from now. It might have one more frond. They just tend to be really low metabolizers.
Sure, because they don't have much light.
They don't have
to
much
metabolize
light.
With.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So
now, what, since we're talking about light, what would be the signs that a plant would show if I wasn't giving it enough light? If, say, I didn't do my research and I just did one of my typical impulse buys.
That's a really good question, Tina, because we see this all the time in houseplants. Number one, the whole plant becomes kind of what I call lax, where it doesn't have as much vigor and strength because it's not getting as much food without the light. It also starts stretching, or what we call etiolating, where the space between the nodes gets longer. So the whole plant gets kind of a stretched appearance. And sometimes you'll think, oh, the plant is growing, but actually it's not so much growing as stretching for more light. And then often those plants will kind of tend to fall down or collapse because they don't have enough strength to hold themselves up.
Oh, interesting.
So especially some of the softer type plants, you'll find that that will happen.
Is leaf drop a sign of not enough light?
Leaf drop is often a sign, but some plants just shed their leaves a little bit all the time anyhow. So
okay.
It's hard for a plant, especially, you know, pothos, as it gets longer and longer, it tends to lose one or two leaves back towards the base, and that way the base sometimes gets a little bit
scraggly.
Thin.
Yeah.
But a good thing to get is a little light meter, and some of the like probe meters that we use outside that are less than $6 also have a little light meter attachment.
Interesting.
And so it is good to put that light meter into the area where you're going to have a plant and figure out what the light intensity levels are. Not 4 feet above where the plant is, but in exactly the spot where the plant is.
At the exact height on the exact table or whatever. Where
right, because
it.
Often a plant that's on the floor will either get 20 to 50% more or less light depending on the window it's adjacent to.
Interesting.
So just be aware that light values can really fluctuate.
And how do those, since I've never had one of those, sounds really cool, how does it express itself? Does it just give you a little bar that says low light, medium light, high light, or what does it say?
Yes, it's very much like the water meter where it has dry to wet.
Got it, okay.
It has the same, uses the same meter, and it's from dark to light.
Got it, and so it's a little needle that
it's
fluctuates.
It's a little needle.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Very easy to read.
That sounds like a no-brainer investment.
It is kind of a no-brainer investment.
Yeah.
And you can use it outdoors as well to figure out, you know, how much light a particular area is getting.
Huh.
Also, another good, just very simple rule of thumb is that you can put your hand between the light source, which would be often be the sun coming through a window, and determine whether it casts a shadow or not.
Oh.
And so that will tell you whether you have light or, you know, bright light or not bright light. If you don't have any shadow, you don't have very much light.
Right.
But if it's strong enough to produce a shadow, that's important.
Okay.
A little higher lights can go in that spot.
All good points. So if I determine that I have a certain light situation, like, say, low light, and I want a plant for that space, what's the best thing to do? Go to talk to a nursery person about their particular stock, do research on the internet. I mean, for instance, I know that the Dracaenias, there's some that do good in high light and low light and medium light. But, you know, even as a master gardener, I would be a little hard pressed to tell the difference between which ones do
right.
that, you know?
You know, there are so many different kinds of Dracaena. Mm-hmm. And Dracaena, by the way, I think we talked about a little bit in the lecture I gave, is one of the best plants for cleaning the air. So if you have something going on in your house where you have high volatiles, you might want to consider getting some Dracaenas to clear the air, so to speak, if you're worried about air quality. One every 100 square feet, which is like 10 feet by 10 feet, can kind of help with that. That's research that NASA did, found that some of the Dracaenas do the best job of cleaning the air. Yes, go to one of the better nurseries in your area and discuss it with whoever runs the houseplant section. And I know we have some terrific resources in our area. We've got Plant Depot, we've got Green Thumb, and we've got Rogers, and they all have dedicated plant specialists for houseplants who can guide you in the right direction. Because we were talking a little bit about ferns.
Yes.
And a lot of people's favorites are Boston ferns. But the true Boston fern is very delicate in our climate because it needs a lot of humidity that we don't have. But there's a dead ringer for a Boston fern that the plantsmen here all know about. So go in and ask for the Boston fern that's, what I ask for is the one that's not going to die. And they all
know exactly
what I'm talking about, and get me to the right Boston fern. So it's, you know, just, they understand that. They don't want the plant to die for you either.
Right. Oh, that's funny.
And the same with the Dracaenas. Yeah.
Okay. So we talked about the time of year that light can change mm-hmm. over the different times of year. But is there a concern about, for instance, I have a lot of plants, you know, in windows that I also have mini blinds or, you know, wooden blinds in front of. Does it make a difference? I mean, I'm sure it does, but when you can tilt those blinds, I kind of leave them tilted so that they're getting a lot of light, but there's no light shining directly on them. Is that a good practice, or it probably depends on the plant, I suppose.
You know, here comes the master gardener.
Yeah.
It depends on the plant.
Yeah.
You know, it can even depend how dirty the screen is, how much light gets through to those plants. And sometimes there's a difference between direct and indirect light.
Uh-huh.
You can sometimes bounce a lot of light around a room, depending on how you angle the blinds. Again, kind of do that shadow trick and see how much light you're getting in there. You can adjust the blinds and make sure that you can still have enough light down at the values that are high enough for your plants.
For your plants, yeah.
So generally that's in your eastern, western-facing windows.
Right.
Northern-facing windows aren't going to get much sun at all. They'll have what's called sky shine,
uh-huh.
which is just the light from the sky itself.
So those would be the windows where you would need to have the lowest light plants.
Right. And your western windows are just maybe too hot in the summertime. They're probably fine in the wintertime.
So if they're too hot in the summertime, we talked about what your plants will say to you if they are not getting enough light. What will they say to you if they're getting too much light?
Well, in too much light, you can often get tip burn, which is really very common. And it's also common with some watering variations. So, and you'll get actual burn where the surface of the leaf will turn black or brown or just basically look kind of crispy.
So there's sunburn.
There's sunburn.
Poor things get sunburned.
They do. And
yeah.
sometimes the sun can switch around really quickly. So that's where you as a gardener have to kind of be aware of that. If you're getting hot in the house, evaluate how your plants are doing too. Yeah.
When you switch to a tank top,
maybe a t-shirt.
Okay, so anything else you want to say about light, or do you think we've pretty much covered it?
I think we've pretty much covered light. We didn't talk about artificial light, which is something that's probably worth looking into.
Okay.
If you have a lot of plants and you want to overwinter them, some people in different climates bring plants in. And there are some great LED lights out there now. There are also like cheap hacks for plants in this in the wintertime. I know that if a lot of people have under counter lighting,
right,
which is a little T9 or T8 fluorescent
yeah.
bulbs,
yeah.
and sometimes those can be really therapeutic for plants. So huh. if you have a plant that's kind of struggling through, especially right now in January and February, sometimes you can kind of like sneak it into the kitchen after the holidays and give it a sun bath under those lights, because it's a good, gentle, indirect light, and it's still enough energy to give them good growth, better wow. than a dark window.
That's really good to know, because my whole kitchen counter has those lights. So
yeah,
won't might. My husband be excited when he comes home and sees all the these plants lined up?
I think you start seedlings under those lights and on top of the toaster. Just be sure you move them
before you do your toast.
That's funny.
Yeah. Talk about a heated steam mat, right?
On
top of the toaster.
Yeah. Yeah, you can also buy lights as well, and that might be a worthwhile thing if you really have significant expensive plants that you want to keep happy through
yeah.
the winter.
Yeah. Oh, all good points. Okay, so we've done the P and the L in plants. What's the A?
Well, so when you buy a plant from a nursery, sometimes they can look a little rough, and sometimes they've been either pampered or not pampered, depending on, you know, where the plant is coming from. And it can take them a little while to, just as a plant would out in the regular garden, get used to their new situation. So one of the things I like to do when I get a new plant, number one, is to inspect it thoroughly, because you really want to make sure you're not bringing any pests into the house. Make sure that plant is clean. I give them a real quick little bath and just kind of like a little newborn. You're checking uh-huh. to make sure that everything's clean and you're not bringing anything in. Clean out any dead leaves.
How do you give them a bath?
I use a tiny amount of soap, and uh-huh. now, like just a drop, uh-huh. and maybe a quart of water. Make sure the water is lukewarm or room temperature, not cold.
Okay.
Cold is, it's really important not to like never use cold water on your house plants, because as I said, they're metabolizing really slowly, and you might not think that plants are sensitive to cold,
uh-huh.
but quite a few of them are, because a lot of the house plants are subtropicals or tropicals, and they don't ever want to see it below 55. And sometimes the water coming out of the tap can be cold.
Sure, in the wintertime,
and
sure.
if you chill them, they will have, you know, you'll see effects in their leaves, and sometimes they just sulk a little bit. So, as I said, room temperature water, just a little drop of like detergent, shake it up, spray it on, saturate the entire plant.
Ah.
Because you want to get it down in the nooks and crannies in case there are any like little mealybugs or aphids or anything lurking in there. And then just give it a little rinse off, and with a very soft cloth,
mm-hmm.
Dry the plant off thoroughly. Now, this is for foliar plants
right.
that I'm talking about. If it was like an African violet, they have a completely different protocol.
Sure, sure.
So just know that you want to, for any houseplant, always be careful that the crown is kept relatively clean and dry. That's the place where the leaves and stems connect to the roots. You want to make sure that that's kept clean and dry.
Oh, great. So you inspect it, you clean it, and then you put it where it's going to go.
Put it where it's going to go. Observe it for a few days.
Mm-hmm.
If it's been used to being out in super bright sunlight, you might want to actually kind of inch it into the house. Like some of the house, if you have a plant that you're overwintering,
uh-huh.
you want to kind of first bring it to a patio and then bring it into the house.
Good point.
If it's a plant that's been used to being on a brighter bench,
uh-huh.
like you'll see, you know, when you go to buy them at the nursery, sometimes it's a very bright space. Observe it for a little while. Make sure that it's settling in well, because sometimes they just need to be taken into a lower light situation a little more slowly.
Okay. And so we're calling that the acclimatizing of the plants, getting them used to their new home.
Right, right. And usually I water them the first time and let them dry out at kind of their own pace.
Okay. So you do give them a good watering when
you get home. I give them a good watering. I think that's part of... I often dunk my plants, the foliar plants, not all my plants, but I dunk them, submerge the entire root ball just to make sure that there's nothing lurking in there. Because if you dunk it and let all the water, all the air bubbles get out, if there's anything like mealyworms or anything in there, they'll crawl to the surface, and earwigs.
Yeah.
You can get rid of them. And we know we don't want to have those in our house.
Right, right. So by submerging them, they can't hold their breath long enough.
And that soapy water actually helps drive them out as well.
Uh-huh. Oh, good tips. Well, we actually have already gone through half of our show, so I need to take a break and tell everyone that you're listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. And again, the opinions that are expressed on this show do not reflect the opinions of the station, of KUCI management, or the Board of Regents of the University of California. Okay, well, I think now we're to the point of the acronym, the PLANTS, that I think is, I get a lot of questions about from folks out in the community, and that's nourishing these plants. Of course, the number one question that we always get, whether it's indoor or outdoor plants, is how often should I water? And and we always know what that answer is, but
the answer is always, it depends.
Right. It depends is always the answer.
You know, just look at the condition of your plants. And I often let my plants go until they just start to sag a little bit, because I want to make sure that they have as much air in their roots as possible, at least, you know, once or twice, you know, a day or two during the watering cycle. Because if you never let that air get in there, your roots are going to be much more likely to rot and have problems. And we know that's a big problem in houseplants, is
for sure,
being loved to death.
Right.
So it's okay to be a little tough on them and let them dry out a little bit, because just know that the roots are going to be getting a lot of air. You never want to have those roots standing in water. And I know a lot of us use drip cups and things like
saucers.
That.
Saucers.
Saucers, that sort of thing. If you use a saucer, always make sure you have some kind of a small spacer between the drip saucer and the plant itself, so that there's like a little air break.
Interesting.
Some plants, they're fine with that, where they can siphon up a little bit of extra water.
Right.
Often that water's kind of muggy and icky, and, you know, you kind of don't want the plant to be wicking that back up.
Right.
So make sure, like I told you about the dunking method.
Right, right. Where for smaller plants, yeah.
For smaller plants, I even love to do it for ferns, because they like a good deep drink. And for plants with any kind of, you know how the top of the surface of the soil can get white and crusty?
Yes. Yes.
It's a very quick way to help leach out, and also to rehydrate the entire pot. Because sometimes when we just trickle water, only small regions of the soil get moist. But if you dunk, the whole root ball gets saturated. And then as you lift it out of the water, a lot of the salts get rinsed through. So, and speaking of salts, a lot of times, especially if you're fertilizing correctly, and because of our highly alkaline water, you'll get a salty rim, like a buildup of white salts along the inside of the
pot. Oh, all the time.
Pot.
Yeah, every pot I own has that.
So I often take a paper towel and will run it around the inside. Sometimes you almost have to scrape it off. You can even put a little vinegar on the paper towel and clean that off. Because as you water, some of those things are being redeposited, drying back out. And you just have this cycle on the top of your soil of salt building up, drying out, building up, drying out. So leaching from time to time is a good thing. Not every time you water.
Right.
But a couple times a year really does help improve plant health.
That's good to know. That's not something I have ever done. So
yeah. And make sure the first time you do it, because often what happens the first time people do it is the plant actually pops out of the pot.
Oh,
so because it's so dry, the root ball is so dry. So make sure that you hold the two together when you dunk it. And
so that it has a chance to really get wet.
Yeah, and you'll blub, 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 blub. Yeah. And then take it out, put it on a rack to dry, and, you know, drip, drip, drip before you put it back in its pot again. so that it's all really fresh and good to go. And some plants really, really love that.
You know, that brings up a good point. You said put it on a rack to dry until you put it back into its pot. Do you typically double pot your plants? In other words, is it in, like, say, a plastic pot, and then you put that inside a decorative pot?
Almost always.
Almost always.
And that's because it makes maintenance so much easier. You can find really nice, for a number of reasons, I do it that way, because if something were to happen to the plant, I still have the container.
There you go.
Let's get another one. Start with a real reason. No, just kidding. But also, I like really decorative pots. And a lot of times they don't have holes in the bottom of them.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
And they're perfect for me because I just use a pot that has a lot of drainage holes in the bottom. And so
for the pot that you're planting in.
For the plant I'm putting inside of that pot.
Right, right.
So I can take it cuts the weight down dramatically.
Sure.
I just leave the pots where they are.
Uh-huh.
They're often very heavy pots.
Sure.
And just lift out those light, dry plants. Take them all
to a central location.
To a central location. Yeah. You can put them on a tray and with warm water, not hot, you know, baby temperature or less, but definitely not cold. Give them all a good watering. Huh. Leave them to drip dry. And then take them all back, and it makes it so much faster. And you're not running around the house with a watering can and having to worry about your fine furniture getting destroyed by you, things leaking out the bottom.
Exactly. I have a table in my entryway that I totally ruined doing that.
Yes. Yeah. I just find that is the way to have houseplants.
Yeah.
And then I find interesting containers to throw things in, you know, that you can coordinate with your decor.
It's funny because I'm going to tell everyone your secret for this show. So I'm sitting here talking to Kay, looking at this stunning container that she brought that she probably has, I don't know, six different houseplants in. And it's this rather ornate kind of traditional black and gold rectangular container. But if you've never seen one of Kay's presentations, she gives the most amazing presentations because she always has props and she talks about the props and what she's brought. And it's a great way. It's a great way to give a talk because I think it's a lot more interesting for the audience and it's a lot more interesting or a lot easier for the speaker to be able to refer to something.
I have to fess up here. I mean, this is a beautiful container.
Uh-huh.
It's like black and it has decoupage on it. And I bought it at Goodwill.
There we go.
And it was just a very interesting container.
It is.
But then when you stack all these houseplants in it, and they're all small houseplants, it looks like $1 million.
I have to tell you.
But it's just not $1 million.
No.
So there's no reason we can't have great-looking houseplants and let the containers kind of dictate what things are going to look like.
I love this because you probably have, six four-inch pots in there, and tell everybody what you've got in this container.
So I have some in outdoor pots. We often talk about having a thriller, a filler, and a spiller.
Right.
And so that same thing applies for houseplants. So I always have something tall, which in this pot is a cast iron plant, an Aspidistra, and it's actually about ready to bloom. So it'll be throwing up a tall white flower spike.
Even better thriller with the flower.
Yeah. There's a tiny little palm. There's a pothos in there that's our filler. Just easy as pie, right?
Uh-huh.
And the trailer is a little variegated ivy, which I find is just tough as nails inside. And the good news about some of these plants is if I want to go away on vacation, I can put them out on a shady patio. And they'll be fine until I come back, 10 days later.
Wow.
They'll probably even be fine inside while I'm gone. I just, uh-huh. Keep it easy for whoever's looking after my things. And that's it. But the combination of the foliages is interesting. And it is not a big investment. I mean,
it's not. I mean, for a 4-inch plant, you spend from $3 to $5.99 or something like that.
And I grow them on, and then in what I do from time to time, it's like, I need a trailing ivy, and I'll just go take it,
steal it.
And then I'll just grow another one, yeah, you know, because yeah. I like them to look really nice. So, you know, and often the plants are kind of ugly ducklings when I get them. But like I said, some of the smaller plants are quick growers. Why not? You
right.
know, you don't have to spend much and you just grow them on.
Well, I love that idea because I know, you know, especially for, you know, perhaps young people who are just starting out and they want to have, you know, these lovely plants inside their apartments, but they don't have, you know, $50 that they're willing to spend on
right.
getting a house plant, right? But probably everybody can get, you know, $399 house plants, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And not only that, but another thing you can do with this is remember how we talked about our holiday gift plants?
Yes, yes.
Well, a great thing to do that makes it look like you've really got your act together is get one of these containers going where you have the trailing ivy or pothos around the edge. I always leave a 6-inch pot just in the middle.
Uh-huh.
And then you get your 6-inch pot for the holidays and you plunk it in the middle. It could be your centerpiece.
Instant.
Like all the instant centerpiece.
Yeah.
Where so this same variegated ivy and the same decoupage planter, if I were to put a 6-inch poinsettia in the middle of it,
it's a holiday arrangement. Boom, yeah.
There you go for a holiday. Same thing comes around for Easter, and if I want to put something pink in the middle of it, boom, there
right.
I go.
Mother's Day, Valentine's Day.
Do something clear yellow, yeah. boom,
right.
You've got that covered.
Orange chrysanthemum for the fall.
Orange chrysanthemum. Or
what a
pumpkin.
Great idea.
Just stick a pumpkin
in
the middle.
How
yes.
cute.
So, you know, and then you come back to Christmas, and there you go.
And your ivy has lasted the whole year.
Your ivy has often lasted for the whole year, but it's not that big of an investment,
yeah.
and it looks great. So that's what we want, is people to be really happy.
And easy,
and yes.
have plants in your life because it makes you feel good. And
Yeah. If you want to go after the exotics, by all means. But for most of us, I mean, life is busy, and we want to keep it simple and have it looking pretty good.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So that's a great way to
I
do it.
I love that idea. You have that on the table in your entryway, and you've always got something stunning for
right.
you to look at as you walk in the door.
Right, and seasonal.
Yeah, exactly.
Which sometimes just a little decoration helps us make it.
Yeah.
Anything harder. So
so let's, now that we've described all of these great choices and we've talked about watering them, do we need to feed them, or are they just, they make their own food, so why do we really need to feed them anything?
Well, you know, I said how I leech mine, or I do
uh-huh.
and I do, you know, water them from time to time, but I also like to give them good nutrition. Not so much in the winter because they're not metabolizing, but our days are getting a little bit longer now. And usually when nights get up to like 55, that's a key for a lot of plants.
Okay.
I'll take them outside and give them and fertilize them with, generally I like a liquid fertilizer because they're so slow.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I like to do it is I like to give them what's called a foliar feed as well. So one of my favorites is stinky old fish emulsion.
Oh.
That's why I take them outside.
Sure.
Or you can also use any of the water dissolving fertilizers. You want to use lower values.
Okay.
Because again, these plants aren't growing quick. So don't be going.
So not the 15, 20, 15.
No, you
like
want to
that.
Be down below 10s
okay.
on all your values. So like, you know, a 7 is fine.
Okay.
Like a 7 on the nitro scale is fine for them.
Okay.
And then you can start in a weekly, which is where you feed weekly. For me, sometimes it's not weekly, but
it's a weak solution.
It's a weak solution.
Partial strength.
Feed kind of all of the time.
Okay. So when you water, if the instructions say, you know, 1 teaspoon per quart of water, you might do half of that.
Right.
Got
right.
it.
And just kind of have it there. You know, I always talk about how to be efficient in this. Have your watering can and your plant food in just kind of the same spot.
Uh-huh.
And so that it's just very easy for you. You don't have to go looking for anything. Have the measure that it takes right there so that you can just drop that right into your watering can. Again, water not too cold. And I just water the whole plant.
Uh-huh.
For my
foliage. Including the leaves.
Including the leaves. And then I let them soak it up for a little while, but I shake them really pretty well before I bring them inside. And then any plant that is going to collect water down, I'm thinking of orchids now.
Oh, yeah, where the water could get caught.
You want to make sure, like in your phalaenopsis, that you get that dry. And again, as I said, African violets, you know, completely different
totally
regimen.
Different.
They want to be watered from the bottom more than the top. So know your plants.
Cool. All right, so we talked about nourishment. Let's talk about, I know one more thing about fertilizer, which is a lesson that I do actually know. But I know a lot of people, when they see a plant that's struggling, they'll immediately try to feed it. Is that a good idea?
No, usually you want to make sure that, number one, it isn't overwatered, because that's a problem that we see quite often. Number two, it's not underwatered.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that the water levels are right. And then check out for abiotic. That's like whether it's gotten too hot, whether it's gotten too cold. Correct any of those things that you can. Give it a day or two, and then go ahead and feed it a little bit.
But feed
it lightly to start. And then sometimes, we didn't talk about potting soil, but sometimes plants do get a little tired. And their potting soil gets tired too. So sometimes I will take a plant and I will just remove the top layer of the soil where all the salts have built up.
Mm, and like the top half inch or something like that?
It depends on how deep down the roots are, but
okay.
I'll just use a chopstick and very gently pick off the top layer of soil. Sometimes a little of the soil around the bottom, I'll just pop that plant out and take out the mungy soil from the bottom and then get some high quality potting soil and refresh that. So I'll put a little extra potting soil in the bottom to lift that plant up where it needs to be in the pot again. Some more fresh potting soil around the sides. Just take the chopstick and gently put it down around the sides. It's the same way you would pot it up if you were going to pot it up into a slightly larger plant, like
container.
Pot.
Yeah.
And then fresh potting soil on the top. And sometimes, plants, that's just what they need, you know, just a little freshening up. And then you water them really well and see what happens.
And get all excited with their
new roots.
New roots, yeah.
New digs.
Okay, well, we talked about the P of the placement, the L of the light, the A of the acclimate, N of the nourishment. So now we're at T for temperature. What do they want in the way of temperature?
You know, they want comfortable temperatures the same way we do. So most of the time it's between 55 and 85 degrees. Remember I said that 55 degrees is kind of a magic number? Classic example of that is not with a house plant, but actually with an herb that we often have in our houses, and that's the basil plant from Trader Joe's.
Oh, yes.
If you put that plant outside, as soon as it goes below 55 degrees, the leaves come off. I mean, the wheels come off. Everything comes off. The plant just gives up because it can't metabolize below 55. And it wasn't made to live below 55. It's like, I can't do this. I'm just stopping right here. They're snowbirds. They don't want their feet cold. They don't want to be cold. So warmth is really important, but not too hot. Don't put them next to the fireplace. Yeah. You know,
The other thing too, we should probably mention is heat vents. Right?
And humidity.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because I know in the wintertime, I had a heat vent and didn't realize that it was blowing down on one of my plants. And I go, look, and it's like shriveled. Poor
because
thing.
It's pulling all of the moisture out of the foliage. Yes, that's really important. Is these plants really do love humidity, because a lot of them are subtropical, tropical plants. And so sometimes, you know, in the wintertime, they could use a pebble tray to boost their humidity if they're in a very dry room, or if you have the heater on all the time. That's going to be pulling a lot of moisture out of your environment.
What do you think of just doing a spray with a spray bottle?
That works too. That works too if you have that much time.
Yeah. And if you don't have furniture that you're going to be getting wet.
Right.
Sort of
That's why I like to give them,
the bath.
The bath. So, temperature is very important. Air conditioning as well in the summertime. Air conditioning really dries out the environment. So make sure that if they need to be moved to a more humid environment, sometimes people move their orchids into the bathroom in the summertime with the air conditioning on, because even when they take a shower, it boosts the humidity.
Yeah.
So, and they really like that.
Well, and then the last letter in our plants acronym is S for symptoms of distress. And I think we've talked about several of these problems already, the temperature, the light level, acclimating, and water. But can you talk a little bit about pests? Because we haven't talked a whole lot about pests that you might find on your, other than we said if you give it a good dunking, it will cause some pests.
Well, those are the things you don't want in your house, like
right.
The earwigs and that kind of thing. But then there are the ones that come in, even it's like you don't even know how they get there, like the spider mites and the mealy bugs and the scales. It's like, how do these even get into the house? Fungus gnats that can sometimes, you know, get started on some of the potting soils. A lot of times, just your general plant health, everything that we've talked about, as you said, is really important. There are times when it's, in my opinion, not worth fighting.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes they're, you know, like if you get a really bad mealybug infestation, you can either get in there and clean, or, you know, I don't want to have sprays in my home. So
right.
Often it's like, again, I look at the plant and I go, well, you know, it's a flower arrangement, and I give myself permission to toss it.
Or it's a $4 pothos and I can go get
another
one.
It's like,
yeah.
I'll go get another one,
right.
You know, that kind
right.
of thing. There are also your simple fixes, which are your soapy waters,
mm-hmm.
which can take care of quite a lot of it. And also just general, you know, anytime you see something going on with your plants, don't hesitate to look really closely. Look deep into your plant. Look where the leaves connect to the stems. Flip the leaves upside down. Check the stems, looking for scale. And as soon as you see something, often it's interesting, you can just take a little alcohol on a Q-tip and clean up mealybugs, clean up scale, if you get it soon enough.
Yeah.
So as soon as you
see
those plants kind of suffering, it's surprisingly alcohol on a swab or cotton ball isn't going to hurt your plants the way you'd think.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yes, and it can often take. And the same with a little tiny little bit of soapy water. You know, they're not that sensitive. And if they are, well, you know.
Time for somebody a little
time
sturdier.
For something else, because there are organic pesticides and things like that, but still it's still a pesticide. So,
right.
You know, those are all personal choices, and if
sure.
you go to use them, always follow the package instructions.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, we have about 3 minutes left, and I wondered for me personally if you would talk about orchids just for the last few minutes that we have.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Because I always, you know, I go grocery shopping at, you know, a store, and I see a nice little Phalaenopsis, and before you know it, it's in my cart.
We all do. They just jump in there.
They jump in the cart.
And
I swear.
Something, I stand up a little straighter when I go to the checkout register because I've got my orchid, especially, you know, I love the Phalaenopsis.
Me too.
And, you know, the dendrobiums and the oncidiums. Favorite the Phalaenopsis, because those darn things will bloom for like 4 months.
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
And then the blooms finally fall off, and you're left with these two tall spikes. And at that point, you just follow the stem down to where it almost meets the plant, and you look for a node, a little spot where it looks like another leaf could start, and you just clip it off.
On the stem, but you leave a little chunk of it?
Just a teeny little bit of it, because it needs to dry out.
Uh-huh.
And often they'll come back again if they've been happy. If your leaves are happy, your leaves should kind of have a really gentle arch. They shouldn't be like too deeply V'd where they're kind of folding up or anything.
Right.
They shouldn't actually kind of be falling over the edge. The roots should be white and relatively vigorous to warrant keeping it.
Okay.
If any of those things aren't the case, if the roots are brown, the leaves are sagging, I give you permission to throw it away.
It's a flower arrangement. Throw it away.
Yes, right.
I love this. This is going to be my new mantra. And my husband will be so happy not to have all these half-dead plants around.
What happens this time of year is they start bringing in the cymbidiums.
Yes.
And they're good for a few weeks, but they really want to be out on kind of a bright patio after they've bloomed.
Oh, okay.
And then they have their own feeding regimen, which you can look up online. You know, just how to take care of a cymbidium. There's a certain time of year when they want to be fed for foliar growth.
Okay.
and for developing new they're kind of pseudo bulbs in order to throw up blooms again the next year. They want to be tight in the pot, so don't, you know, replant them for a couple of years. And
they like to be outside.
Okay. And actually, they shouldn't be a dark green color. They should actually be kind of a light green color.
The leaves,
uh-huh. Because that means that they're photosynthesizing at the rate they need to be photosynthesizing to make new flowers
for the next year. Which is a little counterintuitive.
Counterintuitive that they look a little pale when uh-huh. they're actually happy, which that sometimes people don't know that. They think they're dark green, and it's like they wonder why it never bloomed again.
Yeah. Okay, and the last thing that you told me before the show I want you to share before we end. So when I have this Phalaenopsis and it's done blooming and I've trimmed the little stem, but now it's just sitting there, what do you do?
Because I love this. This is so funny. I say it's okay to go faux. So there are some killer replica blooms.
Uh-huh.
And okay, keep your plant. It'll still look like it's a live plant.
Yeah, because the leaves are alive.
Put the fake, a really good, we may qualify that, fake spray on there. And your plant will look as if it's still blooming.
I love it.
And so in a year and a half, it's going to take for a new spike to form. You can still be thinking good thoughts about your plant.
I love that.
And that's the same for succulents,
uh-huh.
because a lot of people think succulents should be growing in the house. And you know what? They want to be outside. Grow them outside, grow them flat, bring them in for parties. But like, if you really want to have that succulent look that's popular now, it's okay to go faux.
Go faux. I love that. So I have two new mantras now. It's okay to throw away and go faux. Okay, thanks so much for coming today. I learned a lot, and as always, it was great fun.
Thank you, Tina. I always have a blast.